But what it really means is what you were saying was just not worth saying, and you probably shouldn't have written it.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great if that's actually how people treated writing content for us to go consume and on the internet? You know,
it's just not how it is, man.
This is not. This they were not like, oh, how it
turns
it
out.
Do.
It turns out I said nothing. Maybe I should just not hit publish. But then, where would Twitter be?
Where would it be?
Probably profitable.
Scotch.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to episode 105 of Coffee with Butterscotch, the game dev comedy podcast of Butterscotch Shenanigans. I'm Seth, and I'm the games programmer.
I'm Adam, and I am now a cyborg.
I'm Sam, and I'm a mythical leprechaun.
And today is June 32nd, 2017. Before we start, we have a warning. Anything can happen on this show. We have traveled forward in time, so culture is different now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So
our norms may be different than your norms.
Yep.
And we're referring to people named
people
Norm.
Named Norm. Yep, yeah. They're just all different now than they used to be.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, because of culture, it changes.
But
over
all of your norms died, and we just have new ones. So
yeah. Also, there will be profanity on this podcast, but that's totally acceptable now here in the year 2017. Mm-hmm. So
it's been a little, the culture's really loosened up.
Yeah, we mostly just keep this warning here out of tradition, mm-hmm. really.
Yeah, this podcast has been going for 1,000 years at this point.
Well, actually, we took a 1,000-year break since the last episode.
Oh yeah, right.
Actually, given the number, actually, is this episode 105 or is this episode a bigger?
Well, the thing
that?
Is, numbers don't mean anything anymore
because now
the world is ruled by an artificial superintelligence.
Mm-hmm.
And we all just lounge around and are fed grapes. So we all forgot how math works.
Yeah.
So it's fine. You know?
Yeah, what is math anyway?
I don't know.
I don't know. I forgot.
I guess who cares, right?
So since nothing matters and we live in the future, let's just get on to some questions. And just see,
I don't know. I mean,
see
do you want to talk about some recent events, like the most recent E3?
We could. You know? Yeah. What happened? Sure. What happened at, so this is E3 number 1,000 and some like 30-ish? Number.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Something like that.
Yeah,
I think to me, like the biggest news is probably the launch of the XXBox.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Also known as the Z Box.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah. Obviously, duh. Yeah, right. I thought that was pretty cool. And I mean, that was kind of paired because actually, Microsoft and Nintendo, as everybody knows, are the same company now.
Yep.
And Nintendo is
Microtendo,
who recently also launched the new 3DS Extreme,
3DS
Extreme New
2D Edition.
Right. That yeah. one. And which is really similar to the one that doesn't have that like little suffix on there, you know, but they've added some pretty cool, you know, graphics capabilities. Like the thing actually, I think it has like a whole gigabyte now.
Yep. Mm, they've really moved forward with their RAM.
Yeah, my favorite thing is they have that 4D slider on it. So when you play it, it actually moves forward in time.
Actually, yeah. And you move forward and backward in time, actually. Yeah.
But there's been a lot of hints, and this is something that Microtendo didn't really spend much time on because they've just been kind of teasing at it, but they're working on their new 5DS where on the other side you slide it and you turn inside out while you play.
Yeah, yeah. That one gets a little uncomfortable.
I think it's pretty uncomfortable, but you know, they felt like with the 3D, you know, everybody going cross-eyed, people were still cool with it.
Well, I think they're looking back, you know, 1,000 years ago at the VR trend, and they're like, well, everybody vomited a lot during that time.
Yeah.
But they were just getting used to the new technology. So now we're inverting people's bodies.
Right.
Slightly uncomfortable, but we think the populace is going to love it at the end of the day.
Because honestly, you get used to it.
Yeah. Honestly, you know, we're really, even now, we're still just exploring like what a game can be.
It's true.
You know, and sometimes, and we haven't really explored this space of inside out gaming like where your organs are outside your body. It's just a whole new frontier.
Yeah.
But if the frame rate is high enough, you don't even notice.
That's true. I mean, inside out gaming really does depend on about 96 frames per second. Yeah. If it drops below that for even a moment, then your organs go right back inside your body again, and then mm-hmm. the whole experience is ruined.
Yeah, especially if it kind of wavers in between because they're going inside out, like back
it's
and forth.
It's real uncomfortable. Yeah. Makes a lot of people really sick.
You will throw up.
Although, I guess if you throw up while you're inside.
Then really you're just eating.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. People have been known to eat while playing the new 5DS. It's very, you know, it's uncomfortable.
The 5DS, if you want to pioneer a new technology.
Future's here. It's always rough. It's always rough.
The future
rough
is
to be
literally
first.
Here.
Yeah.
Because we are in the future now.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's right. I just want to make a comment on some of the recent, political stuff that's been happening in particular. Mm-hmm. We made the full switch onto solar, which actually just like happened, you know, last week. Mm-hmm. Now solar everywhere. Yeah. The problem has been though that, and I don't know if everybody actually is aware of this, if you've been following the science trends and stuff, but it turns out that, you know, the whole global warming thing, it turns out that it was actually universe warming because we were creating so much greenhouse gases that we just filled up
the universe
with it. Yeah. It's kind of like Betty the Yeti when, you know, she's going up that mountain and global warming seas are just chasing her all the way to space. It turned out to be actually exactly the same thing. And we were just generating so much heat from all this carbon dioxide that we're actually going towards the heat death of the universe. But it wasn't the heat death that we all expected.
We're just burning it to death.
We're just burning it to death. We thought like the heat death is supposed to be where just everything is the same really low temperature.
Yeah.
But actually now we're just
everything the same heated really to high death. Temperature.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, on the plus side, I mean, yes, obviously Earth is uninhabitable. But you know, we all knew that was
we actually
coming,
are
right?
on Pluto right now.
Yeah. So yeah, on the plus side, all the colder planets, you know, they just kind of progressively got hotter. So
it got balmier.
We did spend some time on Mars, and
there was a good there was some good time on Mars.
It took a couple hundred years before we blew
before
it
that planet
accident.
Burned out.
Well, I mean, first it went under the ocean, right? If you remember, because all the ice caps melted on Earth, and it went all the way up to Mars.
And that was fun for a while, but then the water got too hot.
Yeah,
and then so we got tired of swimming. And we had to leave.
Was that phrase, you know, boiling a frog?
Yeah,
you can always turn the temperature up. Yeah, it'll just boil on Earth, and the Earth won't even notice.
And then pretty soon, the humans will have to build spaceships and jump out of the boiling water, and then
destroy some other planet.
Yeah,
yeah.
So
we are good at that, though. We've practiced that craft.
Yeah.
Yep. So otherwise, you know, we're all immortal now, which is great.
Yep. It's a little weird, though.
It's basically redefined all of world politics, and it's really hard to stay motivated, frankly, because there's always time to do stuff, you know?
Yeah.
So we spend a lot of time watching Netflix.
Yeah, if you thought procrastination was a problem, you know, back when you guys only lived like 70 years, I mean, people procrastinated for 70 years at this point.
Yeah. Well, and honestly, you know, that the word procrastination is now just sort of an ancient anachronism. Mm-hmm. You know, nobody even knows because nobody
you can't procrastinate now because you're always going to do the thing.
Yeah.
At some point.
And of course, you know, back in the day, in the 2000s, you know, people are always talking about like the economy, like, oh yeah, it has to be growing. And everybody's like, well, you know, if it grows, it grows, but eventually it'll get there, you know? Mm-hmm. So there's really we've really lost a sense of urgency, I feel like.
Yeah.
Yeah. Immortality is paired with apathy, it turns out.
Yeah. I think the being chased by boiling water has helped.
That was the only thing.
That was the only motivator. It's
now we're on Pluto. So, I mean, like, who
cares? Life has no meaning anymore.
This is
again.
A very boring planet, man.
Yeah.
It's so tiny.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not even sure it's a planet.
It's hard. True. It's hard to tell.
Yeah. I think I may have misspoke, but if you remember that convention a few years ago after we all moved to Pluto and they were like, it feels bad living on a thing that's not a planet. So why don't we just reclassify it to make us all feel better?
Because it's arbitrary. Anyways.
It's arbitrary.
Anyway. Yeah. And really we're just beginning to explore what a planet can be. You know,
that's right,
like we're just right on the frontier of that.
It's true. It's really uncomfortable. I mean, sometimes you throw up because it's spinning so fast.
Yeah. And I mean, who really can say what a planet is? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's just up to the interpretation
of the astronomer.
Whoever experiences the planet gets to decide for themselves whether it's a planet or not. So, so I mean, things are progressing.
They're basically the
same. You know, the more they progress, they're just the same.
All right. So let's get on to some questions. Now, bear in mind that these questions are pretty old. Mm-hmm. They're about 1,000 years old. So
yeah, fortunately our server is still running, which has been pretty impressive. So we were able to retrieve them.
Yeah. And so we'll try to dig back into our memories and try to put ourselves into the mental space that we would have been in had we been answering these questions on in early July of 2017. Mm-hmm. So all right, first question comes from Decoy. I've been listening to the Adventure Zone podcast quite regularly since you recommended it past tense. Would you ever consider a similar podcast product, maybe with some other system like Alternity? I don't know what Alternity is. I think it's maybe like a D&D kind of thing.
I think that's a fair guess.
You know, we did play D&D as a crew
about
1,000 years ago, but we did do it.
And then at the time we were like, we're definitely going to do this again. And we have it.
And we plan on it though, but you know, we got a lot of time.
Immortality makes you lazy. we did play it before and it was a lot of fun. It was very goofy. If I recall, I wore my voice out by pretending to be a very high-pitched bard.
You were a gnome. Most of us were gnomes, if I recall.
We were a traveling band of gnomes.
I was a gnome monk named Tibbly Binglebong.
I was a lizard person named Wadoopy Doopy or something.
Yep.
I don't remember what my name was.
I don't know what it was.
I don't.
A long time ago.
Don't recall.
I have looked into some alternatives to D&D.
Are there any that are faster?
That's the thing is like there's some that are like kind of trying to be, you know, but I think kind of like D&D itself, that you actually have to play it before you have the context to understand even what it's about.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the problem holds true with all the alternatives or the you know, similar kinds of games that they can tell you, oh yeah, it's, you know, this is meant to be kind of a streamlined version of D&D or something, but you can't know that. Like, you can't understand what the hell that is that they even mean, because they still have like a novel you have to read first.
Right.
And yeah, so I don't know. I haven't actually just explored that. Mm-hmm. That space, which maybe, you know, might be something that I, in like the next 1,000 years,
or check we into. Could make a tabletop game.
Whoa.
True. That is a pamphlet. It's just a pamphlet, right, of how to play. So
it's a pamphlet. It's a intra pamphlet game. Not a, it doesn't go on the table. It's in a pamphlet.
Yeah. Everybody, you just distribute leaflets to everybody. It's just a small sheet of paper.
Via airplane or?
Yeah. You just drop them.
Yeah. I wonder if this happened when the printing press was invented.
What, D&D?
If someone just like printed up some hand guides, handbook guides, pamphlet guides to mm-hmm. Dungeons and Dragons, you know, July 4th edition back in the day.
Probably.
That'd be an amazing
It's probably, I think this isn't actually commonly known, but Gutenberg, you know, the guy who invented the press, actually invented D&D. And then it was back in the 70s, people rediscovered the original D&D mm-hmm. book and then just stole all of it.
It was originally called Gutenberg's Magical Printing Adventure.
Yeah, this is something that we discovered about 500 years ago when we were, you know, like going through old libraries and archives and stuff.
Did I tell you about the book called Libromancy from a while ago? Libromancy.
Libra. Like the
Libra, like a librarian.
Oh, okay. Like a book.
Libromancy.
So here's the idea put forth by this book, which is pretty awesome, which is there's some people who can reach into books and grab the things that the book is talking about. And like
grab it?
Like
they can't do it with it other than grab it.
Well, I mean, they can manifest it and pull it out.
So the only physical thing. So like if a book is about happiness, you can't reach in and get happiness.
That's always true, though.
Yeah, that's always true. But you can pull out, you know, laser guns and stuff. But Gutenberg was the first person to discover this.
Oh. Yeah.
It's an interesting book.
Does Gutenberg now, is the way
I'm not
going to
spoil it because he's very involved.
Okay, all right.
So I'm not talking anymore about it.
Cool.
Okay.
But I'd recommend it. It's pretty fun.
All right, I'll have to give that one.
All right, so we're going to, if I just can recap, so we're going to invent a leaflet style tabletop game mm-hmm. that you play with your friends.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, next question comes from Dead Earth Man. Seth, this is for me. That's
All right.
Seth, any plans to bring back the early platformer with the rocket-armed protagonist who looked suspiciously like you?
Don't we just make ourselves in video games after all?
It did look suspiciously like you. It was mostly the rocket fists.
It was mostly that, yeah.
So what was this, though? Tell people.
It was like an ethnically ambiguous, like, middle-aged man with a full beard and head of hair.
Yeah, right.
And rocket fists and green goggles.
Yeah.
So I definitely have most of the. Most of those boxes.
That's what you look like now. But I forgot this was asked, you know, thousands of years ago when you were bald and.
Yeah, I didn't look like that back then.
Right.
But I've undergone. That's right. I've undergone my transmorph.
Yeah. You didn't even have the rocket fists back then.
Yeah.
No, that was a very clairvoyant kind
really,
of
really, you know, life
had.
Just imitates art. You
it
know
does.
What I mean?
Yeah.
So, and art imitates
art. This was a game that this was the first game I ever worked on.
It's called Skybrawler.
It was for a Kickstarter. This was around the time that Kickstarter first appeared.
You did successfully Kickstarter
it. I successfully kickstarted it for a few $1,000s. Worked on it for a year. And according to my sort of projections of what the game was supposed to end up being, I was about 6% of the way done. And I didn't know enough about programming at the time. So the game kept getting worse in terms of optimization, bugs, crashes, everything. Mm-hmm. And I didn't know enough about basically anything about games in general. So the design was bad, and most things about it were bad.
The rocket steering was pretty fun.
Yeah, that's true. You mean when like you turn on your rocket boots
and then you just like fly?
You stiffen up like a human missile. Yeah.
That part was fun.
I sometimes wonder what it would be like to create that now. Mm-hmm. Knowing what I know.
Maybe we should do it for a jam game.
To make a rocket fist
jam
game. We could do that. But yeah, I ended up contacting all my backers and telling them, hey, I'm not going to finish this. Mm-hmm. So let me know and I will send you your money back. So that's what I did.
Yeah. I think only one person asked for it back.
Yeah. A few people did.
A few people.
But most people were just like, I was just happy to contribute. I'm like, well, thanks.
And to be fair, without those people, Butterscotch Shenanigans might not exist.
That's true.
Yeah. Actually, I mean, I did write them a big thank you letter basically saying, you know, it's because of that project that I was able to, instead of getting a law internship for the summer, I was able to sustain myself over the summer and just make games full time. And that was my first experience doing that. I think because of that time I was able to put in, you know, that kind of kicked everything off to get us where we are. So, you know, it was good.
Yeah. And kind of to recap for those of you who might, you know, have forgotten, where we are now is we actually are the biggest company in the entire galaxy.
Yeah. Microtendo is actually a subsidiary.
They're actually very small nowadays.
That's where the micro Peanuts. Comes in.
Yeah. Yeah, they finally, again, life imitated art, you know, where art is a name in this case, and life is a company.
All right, next question comes from 30 Extra. I'm interested in visiting St. Louis at some point. What are the essential things to do in your city? B-Scotch Studio Tour?
I guess we should probably talk about St. Louis maybe now and also
as it was,
years ago.
As it were.
Yeah.
So, it's B-Scotch HQ is small.
It was.
Small.
Yeah. Now it occupies three quarters of Pluto.
Yeah. You'd probably die before you were able to traverse the whole thing, actually. Yeah.
Except that you'd live forever. So.
Right. So never mind.
You'd be fine.
Sorry, I'm still having a hard time grappling with this newfound reality. It's a very strange place.
It's weird because it's been this way for 1,000 years now, but...
It's
hard to wrap your head around.
But the St. Louis of old, BSHQ is literally Seth's basement. So
yeah.
So we don't give out tours because that means me giving out my home address to internet randos.
Yeah.
Not that you're an internet rando. I'm sure you're a perfectly nice, sensible person isn't a murderer.
Anyone you don't know is an internet rando, which doesn't necessarily
mean... And every internet rando is a murderer.
Well, if you just roll the dice.
If you just roll the dice, and it's always a murderer.
Speaking of rolling the dice, did you know that Amazon Alexa can do dice rolls? If you say, "Hey Alexa, roll a d20.
That sounds like witchcraft.
It's pretty fun. I mean, this is, of course,
can
Alexa
consult?
Now could also do like a million other things because she is actually the AI that runs our stuff.
I mean, Alexa is all-knowing and all-seeing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Alexa lives in our minds and hearts.
Right.
But, you know, as it used to be, Alexa was just a little cylinder that sat on your kitchen counter. Yeah.
And we thought it was...
Humble beginnings.
Yeah, we thought it was cute when she could roll dice for us, you know?
Yeah. Now we're the dice. Times.
As far as other stuff to do in the city of St. Louis, it's a very good spot to be to do a bunch of free but sort of high culture things. So the St. Louis Art Museum, totally free and enormous and a beautiful building. Forest Park, which is the biggest park in the country, bigger than Central Park. So tuck on that.
Or you can just drive like another 20 minutes west and then just be in the wilderness.
That's also
which
true.
Is it's way bigger probably than any park.
And it's probably not bigger than Yosemite National Park.
No, it's the biggest city park.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah.
But not also, it has fewer active volcanoes under it.
And bears. There are no bears.
No bears to speak of.
But what if I wanted bears and volcanoes?
Well, if you want bears, then you just go to the zoo, which is in Forest Park.
Is there a volcano zoo?
Which is also free.
But what about
there's no volcano zoo. But there's a science center, which does have volcanoes in it, so I guess it's kind of
It also has a giant animatronic T-Rex, and there's also the City Museum.
The City Museum is crazy.
If you go there, I believe, after 9 p.m., so it's a giant, it's not actually a museum. I don't know why it's called this. Yep. It's kind of a marketing problem, but it's basically a building that's an enormous jungle gym. So it's just several stories
concrete,
tall.
Weird stuff.
Tons of stuff to climb on and like things to go through and whatever. And then I believe after 9, they also serve drinks and they kick all the kids out.
It opens, it's a bar for adults.
It's a bar for drunk adults to climb on.
It's amazing. It's a really good place.
Not super safe.
And everyone's always talking about the arch, of course, you know, going to the arch. It's cool. It's a cool thing to do, but there's other, you know, really neat stuff going on in the city that's free or whatever else. And there's the Fox Theater, so there's Broadway shows, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You can do pretty much just your normal city thing. Yeah,
anything you want to do in a city, you can
good food,
do.
Shows.
Oh, yeah, the barbecue. Holy Mother Moses is good. The food's delicious. Drinks are good.
It's all good. Just do whatever you want.
Just come for a visit. And the weird thing is most of those big things are free things.
Yeah.
So Forest Park is completely free. Science Center.
Although a lot of that's because money doesn't mean anything anymore.
It's also true.
You know? Right. And I mean, we were fortunate in that we took St. Louis with us to Pluto. Mm-hmm. So actually everything we're saying about it in the past is the same as it is now, mm-hmm. which is pretty great.
Yeah.
Though the free
it's
part.
It's weird that the city has remained completely identical, though,
yeah.
in 1,000 yeah. years. But
well, I think, and I don't know, like, I didn't talk to the city planners, you know, like, I don't know them, but, or Alexa, because probably most of this was
well,
her.
Well, that's who the
dealer.
City planner is, but yes.
Well, right. But, I mean, presumably she decided, you know, this was a historical entity that needed to be kind of kept intact.
Preservation.
Yeah. It was a preservation project. Yeah. But it is very cool. I mean, it is the way that I remember it, you know, from 2,000 mm-hmm. years ago.
Yep. Basically the same.
Yeah. Our next question comes from Koolaboola. Indie devs can feel like a filthy used car salesperson when marketing their game, especially sending emails to press lists. How did you get over that yucky feeling? This is very slanderous towards used car salespeople.
Yes.
They're filthy.
How do you get over hawking your wares? Is that basically the question?
Yeah. Well, I think for starters, used car sales folk generally don't spend several years building a car themselves mm-hmm. and then selling that.
Mm-hmm. Also, the reason they feel dirty, though.
You can feel good about that part.
Yeah. Well, the reason they feel dirty, though, is because usually they're selling something that they know is not very good.
Yeah.
So you
their goal is to try to convince you that something right. bad is
You
something
shouldn't feel good. Like a used car salesman. You should feel like a salesman of a Tesla.
You should feel like a Tesla, brand new Tesla salesperson.
Yeah. You should be sitting there and be like, I got the highest
Except if
vehicle.
You were Elon Musk.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because you made it.
Yeah. Do you think Elon Musk felt bad about telling people how awesome the Tesla was?
Nah.
He was like, if you don't buy this, you're dumb.
Yep.
You're a big dumb.
And everyone looked at him and they're like, you're right.
You're right.
Yeah, we agree.
This is a beautiful machine.
So I think that's the first step is don't try to sell things that resemble used cars. That'll be your first step. And then the second step, as far as sending out emails and stuff or just contacting people, is just, what are you worried about?
Remember, you're doing them a favor because if you made something amazing, think about their life. If you're a game reviewer, how many bad games come into your inbox every day?
Many.
How many true used car salesmen are they being buffeted by
right.
every day?
So you finally come in, you've got an amazing thing that you spent years working on. It's beautiful. It's polished. It's the most fun game ever made.
And they look at you weeping.
And they're like, thank you. Thank you for setting me free from this mind prison.
Yeah. So that's what you gotta believe in. I think it's prison. You gotta learn to believe in your own stuff.
Yeah. And I think if you don't believe in it, that's actually just a different
That problem. Means maybe if you do have a gut feeling that you feel bad about even just like exposing another person to the thing you made, you might want to revisit it. Maybe.
Yeah. Either you're not accurately judging your own work or you are. And in both cases, you need to reevaluate.
Right. But it's also true to say, you know, the early stuff you make is going to be worse than the later stuff you make. Right.
Doesn't mean it has to be garbage, though.
It's not to be garbage, but it's okay to feel a little bad about the fact that you couldn't, you know, make Call of Duty 3017 as we're currently on that mm-hmm. iteration these days.
Yeah.
So, you know, just because you can't have the most cutting edge graphics or the most, you know, intense RPG mechanics available, that's fine.
You know, can we talk about Call of Duty for a second?
What's up?
Because it's really weirding me out how like Madden and then the NBA games and Call of Duty have all merged to just make one game. It's just called 3K17.
It's kind of weird.
Yeah. Like I'm trying to play basketball here and I keep getting
shooting
headshot.
Your basketball. Mm-hmm. And
God damn. All right, next
question. But it does feel very real, which is,
I think it feels real.
All we can really ask for.
It feels real as it could feel if you in real life played basketball
and got shot. Because of the suits
that
we wear while we're playing the game.
Right, because of the VR football bags that we wear that simulate feelings and emotions.
Right.
But yeah, I mean, it just feels like there's too much going on.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, I don't know. Maybe next year they'll try something new.
Is it jumping the shark? Is it the phrase? Like, you know.
Yeah.
Maybe they
need to kind of separate back out. Mm-hmm. You know, don't do too much. Just do what you're good at, guys. Mm-hmm. Our next question comes from Edward. This is it. Just Edward.
That's a great B-Scotch ID. Now. He's got that one on lock.
Edward said, how did you arrive at 12% as your margin of error in episode 90? What's your meta margin of error? Episode 90, which was several thousand years ago.
We were talking about,
I don't know why or how I remember this, but we were talking about
Wait,
AB.
Do you actually remember this?
I do. Okay. We were talking about AB testing icons, and we had discussed that if they said that an icon was like 13% better than another one, then that is not good enough to for it to count as actually being better. Because I believe, Adam, you had said that there's a 12% margin of error on that particular
sample. Confidence interval.
It was a confidence interval.
Yeah.
Okay.
Wait, so what was the question again?
The question is, where did that number come from? Okay. Where did that 12% come from?
Came from the statistics panel.
Yeah, so if you have a Google Play developer account and you're selling your Google Play games, then one of the statistics they added at some point is they allowed you to do A/B testing where you could change icons, change whatever, and just see what happened. And they would give you a percent improvement or deprovement relative to the original icon or whatever. But of course, that doesn't mean anything by itself because there's sampling error. Mm-hmm. So what they also do is they just collect stats and they're every time they, increment the counter, they now modify what the margin of error is, basically just recalculate it, right? So they're calculating a 95% or 90% confidence interval, 90% confidence.
90.
Interval. Yeah. So they're basically saying if we were to see this same data, right? If that was coming from the real world, then 90% of the time, the real value would be within this range, mm-hmm. right?
Which means we'd be right about 9 out of 10 times.
Right. So then they give you some numbers. So they'll be like, okay, the number is you did better at 6% or whatever. Our margin of error is 12%, right? And they show you basically like plus or minus over zero, right? Mm-hmm. So they're basically saying it could be plus 12% or minus 12%. And they're saying your thing did better at 6%, like smack in the middle of this margin of error, right? The margin of error means that number itself, that 6%, doesn't mean shit. You can just ignore it. Mm-hmm. It means if you were inside of that range, that margin of error, is that whole range actually the direction you want it to be? Because if it basically is just straddling zero and is nearly symmetrical, flip a coin, right? The number itself doesn't mean anything.
So what we saw with the test we did is we had to wait, I think, 3 or 4 weeks to get enough data to get that confidence interval to be pushed above, completely above 0%, where we knew that there was some improvement happening. We couldn't tell if it was, I think 12% was the top of the thing. 12% better. And I think 3% or something like that was the bottom. So we don't know exactly how much.
So better. This is also, I think it's a good sort of demonstration of the difference between statistical significance and actual significance, mm-hmm. right? So statistical significance
says it's kind of a these are probably different.
Yeah, it's a misleading term because significant in a statistics sense just means that you are confident that it is different.
Yeah.
But significant in layman's terms means that it matters,
right.
Which is not really what
they're not the same.
Yeah, it's not the same.
Yeah. Yeah. So anytime you hear this is just important life tip. Anytime you hear a study talking about how, this group of people in some study had showed a significant improvement in something, if they don't also tell you by how much,
right. Well, and I think importantly,
and the margin of error.
Well, and also, even more context, are they telling you absolute numbers or proportional numbers?
Yeah, because that also matters a lot.
Because sometimes there'll be a study where they'll be like, did you know that if you eat bacon, you are 3 times more likely to develop this particular type of cancer? And it's like, well,
and the baseline rate is like 1 in 100,000.
Yeah. So you're like, okay, does that meet? Is it? So if my chance goes from like 0.01% to 0.03%,
do I care?
Is that really probably a not. Risk?
Right. I'm going to keep eating bacon.
Yeah, because that's the idea of relative risk, which you see a lot in medicine. They'll talk about terms in relative risk, but what you care about as an individual is absolute risk. Because it's going to be with like getting on an airplane, right? It's like, yeah, if you get on an airplane while it's bad weather outside, that probably changes your relative risk dramatically.
Yeah.
But your absolute risk of that airplane, something bad happening, is still nearly zero.
Yep.
So.
And plus, whenever something bad happens, the airplane just disappears.
Yeah, I mean, Alexa.
Nobody even knows.
I think Alexa just takes it out of the sky and puts it safely down somewhere.
On Pluto or something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I mean, unless you're United, but we know United actually turned into a gladiatorial combat.
People pay for a couple that hundred now, years so, ago. So it's okay.
It was a really good sort of business pivot. It wasn't really much of a pivot, frankly.
Right.
They just understood
the niche.
They just doubled down on their competitive advantages.
Yeah.
Which I mean, and they're still around, so they're still
offering
kicking
in-flight violence.
They're literally kicking it.
Yeah, I mean, I did try United Flight once, but whew, man, that was I left with so many wounds.
Yeah,
yeah.
I trained for it. Yeah, it was kind of like like those really old timey things. Those places where you could go like buy stuff and break it in a room, mm-hmm. which like we felt like that was really edgy, it was kind of, it's like that idea, which always felt really good to walk out of there. But it does feel way better just to go on a United flight
and be the only one standing.
Yeah, be the only one standing, like beat the shit out of everybody.
Right, until you're just in a bloodbath.
Yeah, the problem is that the staff there are really good at beating the shit out of people because they're on all the flights. Yeah.
Well, and I think it's also, you're at a disadvantage as a passenger ever since they instituted their one stab per checked luggage policy.
Yeah.
So, you know, you go in there, you weigh it, and they stab you, and then if it's over 50 pounds, they stab you again.
Yeah.
And so you're coming into the fight to the death at a somewhat disadvantage because you are bleeding out by the time you get onto the plane.
But you can pay that extra $50 and you get to not be stabbed one of those times, which is...
Just one, though.
Just one, yeah.
You'll still be stabbed at least once.
Right.
So...
Well, unless you pay $100. Because if you're in the... Was it like the... It's like the metaphysical diamond tier or something like that, you know? Or the quantum dongle tier.
Quantum dongle.
Yep. On United flights. Yeah. If you're in there, then you actually get to stab everybody.
And then you just watch from a safe distance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's only a few people are in that tier.
Yeah. That's sort of expensive. That's a first class kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So. All right. Next question comes from Smelly Platypus. Where have you guys come to know this much life skills and knowledge?
We have been alive for 1,000
It's just a general question.
Which has helped.
How do we know stuff? Well, we talked, you know, back in the summer of 2017, experiment summer.
Mm-hmm.
We made a big list.
Everything worked great, by the way.
Still
doing it. Fantastic.
we were chatting with all the rest of the Butterscotch crew, and we just asked the question, you know, what are you guys interested in doing? What do you want to learn how to do, or what's sort of the next thing on your list? Not necessarily in terms of your actual core skill at work, your trade that you're applying, but the other stuff. So, you know, we give talks, we do the podcast, we know things about a variety of things. We know how to do a wide variety of things.
We write,
all sorts of things. So we made this big list up on the board. And the idea was that we would pair up with anybody who's interested in a particular thing and for Spearmint Summer, tackle that thing with them to help them sort of improve that aspect of whatever they're doing.
Make meaningful progress on
that. Yeah, and I think it was fun and weird, I think, to look at the list we made, which is this really big list of, you know, being able to write technical articles, for example, writing lore for video games, writing short fictional stories that work, handling marketing materials, all that sort of stuff.
Drawing,
giving talks, exercising, doing nutrition and all that stuff. It was a little odd at the time to look at the list and be like, yeah, I feel comfortable doing all these things. Mm-hmm. It's a big list of like good skills to have. And it's kind of fun to look at that and say, yeah, I got it. So how do we?
Well, I think it comes down. I think it just comes down to not being hyper-focused on outcomes and learning how to embrace processes, right? Mm-hmm. Which is something that we do talk about a fair bit, but it does bear repeating, which is the idea of by constantly being thoughtful about the things that you're doing, you know, doing things like spending time writing every morning and just kind of like organizing your thoughts and planning your day and stuff like that. And making sure that you expose your mind to a wide variety of activities. So like take classes if you can to learn how to do different things. Spend time in the evenings instead of watching TV. And also I would attribute this to the fact that we grew up not watching TV. Mm-hmm. So
being taught to love to read.
Yeah, we read a lot and we like to do things more so than to just...
I mean, just last night I was reading a book about JavaScript for the hour before I went to bed.
Who does that?
Adam, you know?
Yeah, and that's why I know of a handful of things.
I've been rereading the Power of Habit book.
Yep.
Yeah.
Taking notes.
And I was actually talking to my wife about this over the weekend. I was like, you know, it's almost universally the case that people who I talk to who haven't really like put their life where they want it, like they may have plans of saying like, I want to be an author or I want to make video games or I want to do this or I want to do that. There's literally nothing stopping them. They just need to do it, mm-hmm. right? And the one thing that kind of gets in the way is just your general life habits. And so by practicing being thoughtful about things, constantly evaluating what you're doing and taking a step back regularly and saying, am I spending my time the way that sort of matches my goals?
Mm-hmm.
Then over time, this is what happens. This is where you end up.
I also do want to just object to the premise of this, which was how do we know the stuff? Because we actually... don't know anything, and we know that, which is that's the only thing you need to know is that you're just wrong about everything, and that striving towards being more being closer to
it's
right
that confidence interval thing,
yeah, I mean,
coming back. I'm 90% sure that we're in the ballpark of the correct direction,
right? Well, but not being completely, you know, stymied by that so that you can keep on moving mm-hmm. forward. So you just always are pushing through this just vague fog where you know that you're not right, though you're doing the best that you can.
But I think the interesting question that I think the thing people get hung up on is actually the pushing through piece. Because, yeah. you know, going back to your thing about saying there's a lot of people who want to do stuff who actually don't have, who don't necessarily have any limitations put on them.
Or if they do,
feel limited in some regard.
Yeah, they aren't as limiting as they seem to.
Right. So the question is, what's actually happening there? And I do think a big piece of it, and this comes from the Power of Habit book too, is he talks about the core role that simple belief plays in the whole thing, which is you saying, yeah, I'm not good at this right now,
right.
but I will be, or saying, I'm going to keep pushing because I believe genuinely, I truly believe that I'm going to get there or whatever else.
Yeah.
If you don't have that belief in the first place, then yeah, you're not going anywhere. Yeah. You're just going to sit there. Cause why would you put energy into something that you don't think is going to pan yeah. out?
And you always want to be thinking a year out where yeah. we're kind of thinking about, you know, everything that you do right now affects what this same day next year is going to look like.
And
right.
all the years
and after. everything years after, later. Right? And so
compound interest problem.
And mm-hmm. so if you've been doing things a certain way, like maybe you come home every day and you heat up a Hot Pocket and then watch Netflix. And that's kind of your Monday through Friday.
Yep.
And then Saturday and Sunday, it's Xbox 32XZX day, mm-hmm. right? And you're going to play several rounds of 3K17. You're going to headshot some basketballs,
mm-hmm.
yep. You know, and then, and that's your weekend, every weekend, right? And then if you want your life to be different, you just have to accept that you just don't get to do those things anymore. Mm-hmm. Because if you keep doing the same thing, everything just stays the same.
Yep.
Right. And so it's that willingness to look a year ahead or two or three or five or whatever and think, I want this to look a certain way. And if that's true, what am I going to start doing right now? Mm-hmm. And what am I going to stop doing right now in order to make that happen?
Yeah, there's a really good, there's a motivational speech. It's somewhere on the internet, but it says something to the extent.
Yeah, just do a Google search for
motivational speech. I'm pretty sure it's like one of the top ones.
Be sure to add though on the internet yeah, to yeah. that Google search. Otherwise right. you might get, who knows.
You might be on the quantum net.
A VHS tape might just fly through your window yeah, or something.
That can also happen.
But the idea that the guy puts forth is that, and I'm sure people have heard this before, but it's the idea that our greatest fear is not that we're weak, but actually that we're powerful beyond measure. Because that means, if you accept that truth, that the fact that you're not where you want to be is squarely your
you
fault.
You just did that.
You did it. And you didn't need to do it, but for some reason you did. And
it's easier to just go, nah, it's just the way it is.
Yeah. So I really do think people undervalue themselves tremendously.
Yeah.
Basically all the time.
Actually, if you ever say a sentence like, I'm just not good at math, mm-hmm. right? That's not true. That's just you saying, I've decided to be bad at math.
Yeah.
That's not even, you just haven't spent time doing math.
Well, yeah, that's the reality.
You've decided, yeah.
yeah.
But if any time, right, here's a listener challenge.
All right, let's do it.
All right. From this point forward, mm-hmm. literally forever, mm-hmm.
you do have forever.
You mm-hmm. never get to use the phrase, I'm bad at X. Instead, you have to say, I haven't spent enough time doing X. To yep. be good at it yet.
Mm-hmm. Now it's your fault.
Yeah.
Which is how it's supposed to be.
yeah. It's not, you're not just inherently bad. You just haven't put the time in.
Yeah. But the thing is, it's just taking ownership of it, right? Because we also all get to decide what things we want to be good and bad at because we, I mean, now it is the case that we get to live forever so we can be good at just everything.
Yeah.
But, you know, 1,000 years ago, we had to decide, you know, we were only going to live by the time we were, you know, like adults capable of making decisions. So when
it's
we're
time
like,
to retire.
Yeah. Now. We're like 30-ish or something, mm-hmm. you know? Then you're halfway to being at the end already, right. you know? So yeah. you don't have a lot of time. You can maybe become an expert. And also we didn't have just like the automatic brain dumps mm-hmm. you know, from yep. Alexa. So you actually had to learn things for real.
Yeah. And know? We didn't have robot arms. So you had to spend a lot of time at the gym, which yeah, really burned yeah. a lot of hours.
It takes a lot of your time. You know? Yeah. And we had emotions and stuff. And so we had to like talk to other people. I mean,
yep.
it was a lot harder.
It was a lot harder.
and as a consequence, you know, just there was only so much time. And so you choose. Which things do I actually want to spend the time on? And for everything else, that was you making an active decision. No, I'm not going to spend my time to be good at that. I have decided.
The other thing is that that's fine.
That's fine.
Provided you choose a thing. Because yeah. I think the one error that a lot of people make is they say, well, there's all these choices. And then a year later, you come back to them and they're like, there's still all these choices.
I haven't chosen any of them.
You're like, pick a damn thing.
Yeah, pick a thing.
Yep. Pick a thing. And do it. Because I think the reality is, and there's also this funny push and pull, because there's always things that you want to have done in the past.
Yeah.
So for example, I really would have liked to have learned Chinese, past tense, very much so past tense, because I know this will be very hard to do. Yeah.
No, you want to be able to speak
have,
Chinese.
Exactly. Yeah, I want to have already done the work necessary to do it.
Right.
I want my past self to have done that for me.
Right.
We didn't. So.
And the weirdest thing is that today, actually, everybody speaks only Chinese, except for Sam, who can only speak English.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because he's very recalcitrant.
Yeah. But even like, I mean, he could get... At any moment, he could just get an Alexa dump, you know, and just know Chinese. And
he still just won't do it.
I just
can't speak Chinese.
Yeah, I just can't.
I'm just not good at it.
Incapable of it.
But yeah, I think it's an important note, too, is that maybe the question is, in a year from now, what would it be super nice if you could do?
Now go do that.
A year from now, that you didn't have to go learn in a year from now.
Yeah.
And then just do that up until that point.
Do that now and just pretend like it's a year from now and you're just looking back on yourself and being like, I'm glad I'm not doing that thing anymore. Yeah.
But it is cool to be able to look back though, fine. Like when you get to that point, you know, to look back and see what you've accomplished and where you've come. Mm-hmm. And I think as soon as you actually start to do that for real, then that thing itself becomes really just kind of addictive, you know, where you want to, you get to the point where you're like, shit, like I figured out how to do this, you know? And yeah, you worked your ass off on it. You might've spent a year or years.
It's actually this weird thing. We had that NPR interview here live in St. Louis back in 2017. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, we've been given a lot of talks. We talk to a lot of people. We practice speaking on the podcast. We generally enjoy sharing what we know and telling stories, that sort of thing. But going up there for the interview was weird because I've started to feel increasingly like it's almost an out of body experience now. When I go and if someone asks me a bunch of questions about or wants to interview about a thing that we did, because it's sort of like there's an expert in my brain who knows really well how to talk to people about stuff, crack jokes at the appropriate time, etc.
So you're just along for the ride.
I genuinely feel like I'm in the background and this thing is just responding to whatever the questions
actually,
are.
That's how any expert level skill is, right? When you get really, when you get really good at programming a certain language or tackling certain kinds of problems, it's automatic now. It's, mm-hmm. it's part of your animal brain is now solving those problems for you. And then it is weird. Every once in a while you look and you're like,
I did that.
I didn't even know that I could do that, mm-hmm. you know, and it just happens automatically.
Yeah. And I think one final good sort of tool you can put in your toolkit for sort of like for developing skills and putting in the time is to find somebody who's capable of doing the thing that you want to do, but who is also a total big doofus.
Mm-hmm.
And be like, well, if that doofus can do it,
right.
Come on, you know?
Yeah.
It's the doofus technique.
Mm-hmm.
All right, next question comes from Retro Banana Man NL.
Who is
I haven't seen him in 1,000 years.
Yeah, he's really retro these
Very
days.
Retro. Still hasn't gotten his Banana Man license back.
Nope.
So he's not non-licensed Banana Retro Man.
I don't even know if you can get those licenses anymore.
No, they were banned. In the mid 2300s.
Yeah.
So
I don't remember why though.
Just
something about like a banana. It was like a banana fungus or something.
I don't know why they ever handed them out to begin with.
Frankly. Yeah, that was a little weird. I think it was a novelty item.
Yeah. Question is, you build a lot of robots and demons to let them do jobs and stuff for you. How do you build them? Is it in Windows? What kind of program do you use?
How does one? And this is an interesting thing.
How do you summon a demon?
I also spoke to a writer who had written and just published a novel. And he's like, what do you do? I was like, I make video games. And he's like, I don't even know how to think about how that is done. Yeah, right. So for someone coming in and saying, you know, I want to summon a demon.
Yeah. How do you summon a demon?
How do you summon a demon?
What kind of ingredients do you need to put in?
But I think it's also kind of interesting though, right? Because when we think of, say, a novelist and that, you know, a writer, mm-hmm. right? And somebody tells us that's what we do. And we're like, oh, like I get that because I've written before, right? But we don't really get it because it's a very different thing to know how to write and to be able to craft a novel, right? They're almost unrelated in terms of, mm-hmm. you know, they have the same fundamental skill in the same way that, you know, programming and talking are actually the same kind of fundamental skill, right? But they're just, we have sort of this false perception. Like to me, it's actually the problem isn't even just how do you understand what programming is? It's that we're actually, our perception of what everybody else is doing, who's an expert at the thing they do, is just completely wrong. We just have an easier kind of reference to it, you know,
right?
A closer,
so like, because you're saying, because you have written, then if you were to envision, you're like, I'm going to envision a novelist at their day to day. So you're going to like,
I just write a lot.
They're at a computer. they're at a computer. They got a keyboard. They got a cup of coffee, and then there's some kind of like a text input.
Yeah,
like looks like a Word document or something on their screen, and that's when they're just writing on that thing.
Right.
You're like, I get that.
But if you're summoning a demon.
Yeah, if you're summoning a demon,
then what does that even
look like? What operating system do you use? This is a good question.
I'll envision you sitting there at your computer. You got your cup of coffee. Your screen's up. What the fuck is on that screen?
How does this work? What's the? Is it Linux that you're on? Is it?
So it can be anything. And I think the thing to strive for in demon summoning is to have your demons not care where they live, right? Because if you have a demon that can only live on, you know, Windows 1, because, you know,
or like
remember they started back over, right? Mm-hmm, or some of them can only live on a per sort of IP address kind of place. Mm-hmm. Yep. So if you want your demon to be accessible anywhere, so you can be like, you can get on your Windows 1 machine, you can get on your Mac OS, OS XX machine, mm-hmm. You can get on any of these things.
XXBXI.
And those are, of course, very rare because actually Linux is now the dominant, you know, thing. Mm-hmm. But you want to be able to work on anything because you want to be able to just walk over to some other machine or have, you know, Alexa deliver you one via quantum drone.
Right? Yeah.
And just have a machine and just start working on your demon.
Yeah, because you don't want to be the demonist, which is the name of a demon summoner, mm-hmm. or a demon-mancer. Depending on whether you're from the mm-hmm. north or the southern hemisphere,
right? Pluto.
Yeah, you don't want to be one of those folks and be in a position where you're like, oh yeah, I'm in a situation where I have the demon. I know I made a demon that's perfect for this situation. You go to summon that demon, you can't summon that demon. Demon doesn't show up to do your bidding.
Yeah, and so your demons should just be, they should not care. They should
but
not
how
care
do you get that? How does
so,
that
so that means you need a thing.
You're telling me that. How does it happen?
That means you need a summoning circle that can be put in any computer. Okay. Right? So your summoning circle, that could be like Python, for example. Like Python's a great, like you can take Pythons and wrap them into a circle.
So right.
Like
so you have your incantation.
You have your incantation, right? Yeah. So or something like Node, which is my personal current favorite, mm-hmm. Because Node is also a thing you can use various nodes as points to create a pentagram. You can use that for summoning demons.
Yep.
And so things like this that can now those tools themselves can live on anything, right? So now you've basically made a platform independent summoning circle.
So it was a very robust demon.
Yeah. A very robust way of summoning a demon. Yeah. Cause you can just then use your same demon script, right? Which is just the thing your incantation that
your
you read,
scroll,
your yeah. scroll, right?
Yeah.
So you can just unfurl that thing in any of these circles,
mm-hmm.
yep. and it's just fine. So that's the first step is to choose the proper, you know, summoning circle kind of.
So something like Node.js.
Node, Python.
Node.js, Python, Java, if you are from the 90s, you know. Sure. No offense to all of you.
No, it's a place, the 90s.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, obviously the 1990s, which...
Yeah.
But some of you are from because, you know, we live forever, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So, so first you start with that. That way you can just learn the thing. You don't have to give a shit about where you are. Learn the thing. And then you just can start making stuff. And then all your demons are doing is just solving some problem for you. And it's basically a matter of just saying, I want to know how to solve all of the problems. Just all of them. I want to be able to get thrown a problem and make a demon that can be like, I got this and go mm-hmm. take care of it. But you got to start by making just dumb as rocks
so,
demons.
So as an example demon, we have a pod demon.
Yeah.
That it lives on a server and it watches for SoundCloud uploads into our SoundCloud stream. And that's all it does is it just stares at our SoundCloud feed.
Yeah.
It has one of those fiery all-seeing eyes.
Yeah.
Like
7 days a week. It's just an eye. It's just a big floating eyeball demon. Mm-hmm. And then when a SoundCloud track gets put up, so a new podcast episode gets put up.
It starts screaming.
It starts it's screaming. Shrill. It then evokes the summoning ritual to create.
Yeah, it's actually a series of summoning rituals passed among various demons.
Yeah, yeah. So it triggers the cascade of demon summoning where various other demons pop up and they duplicate the track. They merge the audio with a video file. Then they... log into our YouTube account and then upload it, that new audio video file mm-hmm. as a track onto our YouTube channel.
And also put a description in there for us.
Yeah. Yeah. So normally that would be a process that would take a person like an hour and a half to get through and make sure the upload was mm-hmm. done and copy the description over and mm-hmm. all that stuff.
And a lot of just waiting around.
A lot of waiting around. No, we got demons.
Yeah.
Demons you just do it. You got demons.
Yeah. And that's a problem that, you know, getting to the point where I could make, you know, this series, the collection of demons that summon one another and, you know, and live in different places and all have different kinds of summoning circles. That's a thing that took 7 years of practicing demon summoning before mm-hmm. I could really
just takes build time.
It takes time. It takes time. But the place where I started a long time ago, 1,000 years ago,
I got
a book on C++ mm-hmm. for game development. And I can't remember. It's some internet thing. It was actually pretty good, and it was enough. I was told by a friend at that time that a good place to start if you want to become a programmer is C++ because It's really hard and it requires that you understand fundamentally what computers are doing. And then once you get sort of a foothold on that and feel like you get it and get what's happening, then throw that away forever and then move to something. Yeah. Move to something more sensible where you can use, you know, you can use your summoning circle anywhere. Cause C++, you have to construct the summoning circle on wherever you want to summon your daemon. Right. So it's a very labor intensive, very hard to do, but something like Python or something else, you don't have to do that. So that was his recommendation. That was what I did. And so I learned just enough to basically make little sort of text-based, you know, things where I would just have text that come up and I would answer yes or no, right? And progress a story. And then I started using it for work where I would start taking the files that I was dealing with and start making programs that just read the files and processed them and then did something interesting.
So instead of doing stuff by hand, you just like, right. I'll just make a
daemon.
Make a daemon. Yeah.
And at the beginning, I never asked the question, will I actually get a sort of a time boost out of making a daemon to do this for me?
Because at the beginning, no.
At the beginning, no. And that's not even the point. The point is to, once you understand the problem and can solve it, the cool thing is, you know, now it's solved forever, but maybe you only needed to solve it once. Mm-hmm. But at the beginning, you don't care. You just say, I want to try to find problems that I can cast into, you know, a daemon scroll so that I can actually summon a daemon to handle this problem for
right.
me. And you just start with easy problems. Like when I was teaching my wife how to summon demons, I did it with a scroll that basically all it would do is it would take a paragraph and insert comma buts before every period and exclamation mark. And we just called it the butts generator, right? All it did was just pointless butts and dumb
stuff.
Yeah. And so, you know, it was a pointless problem, but very, you know, kind of cute and funny so that you can kind of stay engaged with it. Because I think the main problem when you're trying to learn how to summon demons is just the language is so archaic, you know, it's like mostly in Latin and it's just hard to, it's just boring as fuck to read. And like,
you got
to
deal with pythons all day.
Yeah. But you got to wrestle snakes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the problems they're trying to solve are also just like, they're so businessy and uninteresting, you know? And so if you just invent your own as stupid as possible problems that are as small as possible and start learning just enough to do it, you know, find a book on it. And as you're reading through that book, it'll give you examples. It'll be like, type in this code and make it do this. Don't stop there. Don't keep reading the book. But like, you do stop there, just stop and ask that. Exactly.
What if I do this instead?
Right. Mm-hmm. What if I add this line to the scroll, or what if I change this glyph or something, right? Like, what happens now? What happens next? And then get to the point where you can predict what happens next.
Yeah, you don't, in learning how to summon demons / program, just for those who are lost in this metaphor, this is just about programming. you don't really learn by doing so much as you learn by experimenting.
Yeah.
So if somebody just says, hey, write this code and it'll do this thing, you could do that.
You could learn.
You're not going to know what the fuck you just typed or why. So it all comes down to just starting to fiddle with things and change stuff and see what happens.
Yeah. And so it's all about just trying stuff, experimenting. And again, not worrying about whether or not the things that you're creating, the solutions that you're coming up with are worth coming up with.
Like, just
ignore that question.
Yeah, this goes back to what we were talking about earlier about recognizing where you are
and
believing that you can get to the demon circle summoning.
Right.
And just being like, I know that it's possible to make real, real good demons.
Yeah.
Right now, all my demons are total dummos and all they can do is put butts on things.
But that's awesome.
But I got butt demons now. So I feel like I could take this knowledge further.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know,
and have whole body demons or something. Yeah. Right. Mm-hmm.
Because the thing is, if you can put butts on things, maybe you can take butts away from things, you know?
Maybe you can turn things into butts. And then from there,
who knows? The sky's the limit.
Or the butt's the limit.
Yep. Yeah. And then you can write a cloud to butt extension for Chrome, which is a real thing.
It's a real thing.
It's an extension on Chrome that replaces every instance of the word cloud with the word butt. But here's the thing. This extension appeared just as a joke before the word cloud came into common usage as like the uploading internet. Data.
Mm.
And so there's this hilarious brief moment in time where for a few years, people had this cloud to butt extension. And then just a few times a day, would see the word cloud replaced with the word butt. And they'd be like, hey, butt. And then all of a sudden, there's this huge surge in companies talking about cloud storage. And these people who had installed this extension, it was so sort of low key.
And they just kind of forgot that
it was there. And there was a handful of people who suddenly popped up on the internet who were posting screenshots being real confused about why all of a sudden all these companies are talking about butts.
I actually,
Apple's talking about butts. Google's talking about butts.
That's good.
I wanted to write an extension. It turns out the whole like Google Chrome extension ecosystem is disintegrating and you can't really do it anymore, unfortunately. But I was looking into it a little while ago because I wanted to make an extension where anytime you're on an article at certain websites, like news sites or science sites or something, that it would replace every word with every word. Like, for example, may would say may or may not.
Mm.
And every time it said was shown to, I would say some people saw this happen in a few cases, right? And just replace it. Because I was thinking
it's a science article interpreter.
Yeah. Because right, the thing is, when you literally anytime you read an article and you see the word might, that means might or might not.
Right.
That's literally what that means. But it's always used to imply favorably that that's, you know, that that's what the thing is. And I think this is true for our general, the state of journalism today, right? When you're reading CNN or whatever.
But can you imagine reading an article where someone was hedging that much about something
nowadays? That's how much they should be hedging.
I mean, they should.
Did you know that there was a study that may or may not have shown that eating up to 3 pounds of chocolate a week may or may not reduce your risk of colon cancer by up to 1%?
And we should replace up to with from zero to that number.
Right.
Because that's also what that means.
Yeah.
You know, when they say it's up, you can do up to, you can make up to $1,000 a month with our scam.
There's also that trick where people say over X number, right? Yeah. Which really just means like very slightly over.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because if they're like over 500, blah, it's like
a truthiness injector. Yeah. Because if some scam said, you may or may not make between zero and $1,000 a month.
Yeah. Instead of you may make up to $1,000, which feels better.
Mm-hmm. But it means exactly the same thing.
It's pretty funny.
Yeah. What it really means is what you were saying was just not worth saying, and you probably shouldn't have written it.
Yeah, wouldn't that be great if that's actually how people treated writing content for us to go consume and on the internet? You know,
just not how it is, man.
This is not. This they were not like, "Oh,
it turns out I said nothing. Maybe I should just not hit publish." But then, where would Twitter be?
Where would it be?
Probably profitable. Boom!
That's never going to happen. I mean, it still hasn't happened in a thousand years.
Somehow they still are losing $1 million.
And I don't, why do people keep buying their stocks?
Yeah.
I don't understand the financial markets.
Man. Screaming into the void as we've gotten further and further into space, it's just become sort of
The void
cultural
is just,
underpinning.
Yeah, the void has become scarier, so we just feel more like we need to fill it with stuff. You know?
Heat, noise,
yep.
Whatever we can, really.
Just pure rage, you know, emotion.
Yeah.
All right, we got time for one last question, which comes from Lagoria, who says, when creating your business, what affected your decision on where to incorporate? I've heard advice about choosing certain states over others for tax reasons. Mm. Thoughts? So we chose Missouri.
Because we live here. Is it supposed to be Delaware? Yeah. Is that the one everyone's all about?
That's if you incorporate as a corporation.
Yeah.
Delaware has an LLC?
I don't think Delaware gives a shit about LLCs.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure. They just have a lot of lenient laws going toward corporations.
But they're actually, and for LLCs in general, actually, there are a lot of state-specific kinds of rules where it isn't just the case that you can necessarily operate your business in one state, but have it come from a different state, right? So all that kind of stuff depends. You're going to need to talk to an actual
expert.
It's
probably the case that LLCs are more strictly regulated in that sense because a corporation is thought to be owned by a lot of different people, right?
Right.
And so, which is why, like, you know, a corporate, you'd have a million shares of stock out there and each one is held by a different person. So where is your company? It's everywhere, right? Mm-hmm. You may be operating out of five different states or one state or whatever, but where you're incorporated just doesn't matter because the owners live everywhere. Right.
So why did we choose Missouri?
Just because we live here.
Well, I think also we
need mail to come here, you know, stuff like that.
And we also, we have not yet and may not ever played the how do we minimize our tax burden game by playing games thing, right? For a few reasons. One is like, guys, just why think about that when we could be making video games? Because if we took that time and made another video game, then we'd have a lot more money than if we saved 5% on our taxes or something.
That is true.
But also hire a good accountant to do that for you.
And as we discussed last episode, just buy a politician.
Mm-hmm.
Boom. Yeah. Good. That's how you cut your taxes.
It is the best way. Yeah. And those are you have to hit a certain level before you can do that though, which is part of the problem. I mean now Butterscotch owns all the politicians, which has been really helpful for us, but it also that's a high barrier to entry for your average person because we already own them. So you know.
Yeah.
What are you gonna do?
Right? What are you gonna do?
Yeah, I guess that's the answer.
Yep. So that's all we have. Even though we literally have infinite time on account of our agelessness, mm-hmm. but, yeah. you know, we're just going to call it a day there just cause you know, whatever. So
we got stuff to go.
Stuff to go sit around and wait on. Mm-hmm. So, we'd like to thank our studio wrangler, Monique, for putting this episode together. Our producer, Fat Bard, for making us sound good. And the B-Scotch dev team, Andy, Tiefen, and Scher, for continuing to build stuff while we're in here chatting. Special thanks to our community moderators who keep our Discord and forums running. And, of course, we'd like to thank our listeners for coming back every week to listen to us talk about a bunch of stuff. Also, if you want to get involved in the community, head over to the Butterscotch Discord. It's located at bit.ly/BSDiscord. Come say hi. We're in there. People are in there.
It's good.
There was a robot that lived in there, mm-hmm. and it died, though. Mm-hmm. It was a sad day.
Yeah.
Also, we don't advertise this show, so we depend completely on word of mouth and good reviews. So if you want to help us grow, please tell your friends and enemies. Then hit up Apple Podcasts or Google Playcasts.
Yeah.
We really need to learn what these things are called.
There's also a 3K17 podcast because you can listen to podcasts inside
the game. While you're no-scoping footballs.
Yeah.
Those reviews help. Everything helps us get the word out, and we appreciate it. So thank you all for listening, and we'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.